Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. We can't live without water, yet water resources are threatened all around the globe. In Alberta, oil sands development, urban growth, and climate change are just three factors that threaten our water supplies. Alberta Ingenuity's Dr. Peter Hackett, as well as Dr. Lauren Taylor and Dr. David Schindler, speak to their involvement with the new Alberta Water Research Institute. And hydrologist Dr. Katerina Vallejo outlines her research to improve stormwater systems to prevent flooding in Calgary. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Water is a big issue in Alberta. The south is hot and dry, so farming occurs through irrigation. In the north, abundant wetlands support the boreal ecosystem. But in all cases, climate change and the human demands on our rivers and aquifers from industry and population growth are compromising water quality and water supplies for the future. This week saw the official launch of the Alberta Water Research Institute. Here, science is expected to inform public policy to help protect our water resources. Dr. Peter Hackett is the president and CEO of Alberta Ingenuity, the agency charged with overseeing the Alberta Water Research Institute.
Well, it's a great day because Alberta's going to invest $30 million at least in water research over the next 6 or 7 years. And that research is to be the underpinning research for Alberta's Water for Life strategy, which takes a look at the kind of things that Alberta needs to do around water to sustain its economic growth.
Now, it was just 4 years ago that Alberta Ingenuity launched the Center for Water Research. How did these two things fit together?
Right. Well, one's small and the other's big, and the small one's growing into the big one, basically, is what's going to happen. So the Alberta Ingenuity Water Research Center was going at $2 million a year, and this one's going to be at $6 million, and we're going to take the best of the one and fold it into the other. So it's going to be a kind of natural evolution.
How are you going to approach the research?
Well, what we've done is, first of all, get ourselves a great management advisory board, and that's going to be chaired by Dr. Lauren Taylor, who was the Minister of the Environment, who led the development of this Water for Life strategy, and is real passionate about water in Alberta and linking the research to the public policy questions so that good informed public policy can be developed. That's the first thing we did. Second, we got together a really top-notch international research advisory council with researchers from Australia, from Berkeley, California, and around the world. And that's chaired by our colleague, Dr. David Schindler here in Alberta, one of the world's best water researchers. So they're going to decide on the big research questions and adjudicate the proposals. But we are going to be supporting large-scale projects. You know, those may be $1.5, $2, or $3 million a year to take on a big question that Albertans are concerned about.
What do you see as being the really big issues?
Well, so it's dry land agriculture in the south, lots of people coming in the middle, and the expansion of the oil sands and the drying up of the glaciers. We know that water determines how much we can do of anything. So those are the big issues right there. But a really topical one that they're going to start working on is produced water that comes out of coal bed methane production. Going to be some serious work looking at the issues around there.
Now, you've also announced a call for proposal.
Right, and that's where you'll get a sensible answer to your question when the researchers get together and decide on those moonshots that we can do in water research here in Alberta that'll make a big difference. That call is coming out now, And we hope to have those things adjudicated and the big research teams in place next April. So that, then you'll really see the rubber hit the road.
This is an institute, and I know that you're moving towards having more and more institutes. Where are you going next, now that you've got water under your belt?
Okay, well, our next big thing is going to be nanotechnology, so stay tuned for that.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Good. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Peter Hackett, President and CEO of Alberta Ingenuity. Also on hand for the official launch of the new Alberta Water Research Institute was Dr. Lorne Taylor. During his time in the provincial legislature, as both a Minister of the Environment and Minister of Innovation and Science, water was an important issue for Lorne. Today, he brings that passion and experience to his position as Chair of the Management Board of the new Alberta Water Research Institute.
Well, my vision for the Institute is to take the funding that the government has given us and start solving problems or providing evidence to water managers, your local water managers in Edmonton, Calgary, Drumheller, provide them with good evidence, help them make decisions, and to provide policymakers with good evidence to make decisions. Because as you are aware, water is a huge issue in Alberta. South Saskatchewan Basin is closed. You've got some issues just around Edmonton here with the upgraders going in. And, of course, everybody's familiar with the tar sands and the river there, Athabasca River there. So the issue is, how do we make good decisions? Well, we don't have the evidence yet. And so the goal of the Water Institute, one, is to provide that evidence. Two, is to be the center of water research in Canada, North America, and the world eventually. So we're going to be a center, and we will have networks coming out of the center and back to the center in Alberta from all over the world. That's part of our business plan.
Now, the research that's being done on water, that's also tied into the government's Water for Life strategy. How do you see those two things fitting together?
Well, we have made it very clear that the Water for Life strategy is the strategic document. That is the government policy on water. And out of the Water for Life strategy, the Alberta Science and Research Authority, on the request of the government, developed a research agenda. That research agenda then went to Alberta Ingenuity, and Alberta Ingenuity went to the government and got the money. So it's kind of a circle there. But clearly, the Water for Life strategic document, then you have very practical and applied research goals and a research agenda coming out of Water for Life, developed by AZRA and Ingenuity.
How do you see the politics and the science coming together? Sometimes scientists and politicians are at odds. How do you think this one will work? Will it be different?
It's absolutely going to be different. I used to sit in the ledge and look across the university and think, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars there. There's a lot of smart people there. None of it's coming across the river. And that's for a whole series of problems. In fact, I gave a speech Monday night in Edmonton here on those issues. So we can't have that speech right now. But this will be different because we're going to be very clear and very focused on meeting Alberta's needs first. And I can tell you, I know the politicians. They are anxious for some good evidence on which to make decisions. And that's what we're going to provide them. And we've got, and it's not, as I said earlier to the group of academics, it's not going to be Mickey Mouse science. We've got Dr. David Schindler heading our scientific advisory committee. He's a scientific advisor to the board, and he will assure you and us that anything that comes forward from his group will be world-class science, and that's what we want.
Water has been a passion for you for many years. Why is that?
I grew up in southeastern Alberta. Quick personal story. I remember going with my dad, had a ranch, and he had a whole series of reasons he'd never allow us to live on the ranch because the ranch was where there were no schools. And so I remember going out with my dad to the ranch when a young kid, really, preschooler, 5-6 years of age, and dad going looking at a water hole and despairing that there was no water in the water hole and where was he going to move the cows. So I grew up in an environment, in a family environment, we're still in the cattle business today, where water was vital to our well-being. And that concept has never left me.
We're being warned that in the future, water shortages may actually result in wars. So, of course, water is a very politicized issue.
What can we do now to avoid that?
Well, first place, water shortages have already resulted in wars. You can look at a couple of places in Africa where that's already happened. What we can do, and part of our program is what we're calling the development dividend. Part of our program is to bring in young water managers from developing countries and provide them with some expertise in water management, not to keep them here, but to send them home. Part of our program is to bring in research graduate students to work with our researchers here. Part of our program is to bring in senior water people from developing countries and help them. And because we're so focused on public policy coming out of the science, it's public policy based on science, and that's where our main focus is, developing the public policy. We will hopefully be able to influence these people to make good public policy based on scientific information or scientific research results, and that hopefully will help them.
Thank you very much, Lorne.
Oh, it's great. I love it.
That was Dr. Lorne Taylor, Chair of the Management Board of the Alberta Water Research Institute. Developing good scientific knowledge about water, how we use it and abuse it, is the key underpinning of the new Alberta Water Research Institute. The man chairing the International Research Advisory Committee is Dr. David Schindler. A Killam Memorial Chair of Ecology at the University of Alberta, David is one of the preeminent water scientists in the world. He's a recipient of the Stockholm Water Prize, as well as Canada's Hertzberg Gold Medal for Science, and he's a member of the Royal Society of London.
I think the significance is that we all know, those of us who work on water, that this province is already beginning to feel a water crunch. We always have hid behind the Canadian view that we have lots of water, but Alberta doesn't have lots of water, and Alberta's the size of most European countries or bigger. So we really have to take a special stand on water. We know that in the past we've had droughts that have lasted for decades and more. We know that we're having huge withdrawals by climate warming, and of course the huge industrial and population demands that were mentioned inside are a third factor. And if we don't watch it, those three things could come home to roost and put us into a situation of severe water shortage, at least of good water, within a few decades. So this institute is at least a chance to do things correctly and to plan our use of water in a strategic way.
It's been almost 20 years since you came to Alberta. Water was an issue then. It's an issue today. What do you see as being different now?
I think the difference now is that we finally have the attention of politicians. 20 years ago, politicians viewed environmental hearings as some sort of cosmetic thing, that another little box to check off on the way to getting a project running. As you can see by an ex-minister of environment and the premier himself today, I think politicians are paying more attention to environmental affairs today. And of course, the potential conflict between things like the big upgrader complexes that Premier Stelmach mentioned and water supplies that everyone now recognizes are dwindling due to the effects of climate warming are pretty clear. I think it's fair to say that we as water scientists have the ear of politicians today, whereas we didn't have it 20 years ago.
Well, we're being warned that in the future we may actually be fighting wars over water, and that water conservation, water shortages may even be a bigger issue than climate change. Do you think that when push comes to shove that the politicians will pay attention to the scientists?
I think they'll pay more and more attention as time goes on. Probably the reason they're paying attention today is that they can see, looking back 20 years, that we were right more often than not. And I think we have a better score than economists, for example, that they always pay attention to in that regard. And I think also what's happening to world water supplies, ranging from the southwestern U.S. to places like Jordan, are really beginning to get politicians' attention. I think to average citizens, one thing they should think of every night when they're watching the conflicts in Iraq and what's happening in Iran on the news is that a lot of those countries were once huge aquatic and wetland complexes. That's the area that was supposed to be the home of the fabled Garden of Eden. Look what people have done to it. We certainly don't want to go there.
You're chairing the International Scientific Advisory Board for this Water Institute. What are people from outside Alberta, outside the country, going to be doing? What can they say about the type of research that's going to be done on water here?
Well, for choosing members of the panel, we deliberately found people who both knew Alberta water issues very intimately. Myself, Joe Rasmussen, who's holds the chair in water at University of Lethbridge, and John Thompson, who handled a lot of the water portfolios for Environment Alberta for years and years, represent that. We also have people from California and Arizona. Water scarce issues there are big, and they're ahead of us in the water scarcity department. We don't want to go there. And we're hoping that they can help us avoid these sorts of things that are happening in that southwestern corner of the U.S. We also have people from Australia, which is probably the country and the continent where water scarcity is the biggest issue right now. And people from Germany, where water pollution is a huge issue and has been for years. So we have a group of people from all over the world, all world-renowned in fields ranging from ecology to sociology to traditional knowledge, who can help us on this. And we're all well enough connected that if we find a proposal that we don't feel competent to evaluate, we know people who can, and we'll get them to peer review it for us so that we're sure that we have the top quality research in the world before we recommend it to the board.
The call is being put out for research proposals. What do you want to see come in?
I'd like to see a broad cross-section of things that represent ecology, of course, and watershed and ecosystem protection, engineering solutions to water problems, sociological proposals that will help us get the feel for what people from ranging from First Nations to rural people to urban dwellers really want and need in the way of water development. So I'm hoping for a wide diversity. I'm hoping that we won't allocate all of the water into one basket, so to speak, go all for engineering solutions, for example.
Thank you very much, David.
You're welcome, Cheryl.
That was water scientist Dr. David Schindler. He holds the Killam Memorial Chair in Ecology at the University of Alberta, and he will chair the International Science Advisory Committee for the new Alberta Water Research Institute. A few raindrops after a hot sunny day are welcome, but it's another story when the rain turns into a deluge that floods rivers and turns basements into sopping messes. Climate change and human development are altering watersheds and weather patterns. As a result, floods that might occur only once in 50 or 100 years are becoming more frequent. And that's playing havoc with the capacity of municipal storm sewers to carry away water generated by storms. Dr. Caterina Vallejo is an associate professor in the Department of Civil Engineering at the University of Calgary. She recently spoke at the Petroleum Club about her research with the City of Calgary to deal more effectively with stormwater.
Well, the flood of 2005, and before that we had another flood in 1995 in the Elbow and the Bow Rivers, it created a lot of damage to property and a lot of economic cost. This flood was basically generated through a series of continual rains that had occurred during our spring rain time month of May. And then we got a sudden blast, a very heavy rainstorm that dumped about 50 millimeters onto this rain-soaked soil, and basically it created this massive flood. And this flood inundated both the minor and major drainage systems in our urban areas, so we got a lot of flooding, localized flooding in people's basements and so forth in the roads. And so, as I said, it created a lot of damage. But it's due to a continual heavy onslaught of rain and then a sudden downpour. That's basically the mechanism behind it.
Now, is this something unusual in sort of the bigger sense of what happens with climate and weather over time? Or are things changing?
Well, we expect things to change. The mechanism for flood generation is pretty much similar from flood to flood, at least for this area. But we expect that climate models tell us, at least what regional climate models tell us, is that precipitation, at least during our flooding months, such as the months of May and potentially June, are actually going to be increasing. So if that's the case, then we may have more incidences of these continual rains that soak the ground, and then if we have a nice big storm, we're going to actually get a nice big flood. And so it's actually quite possible that we're going to get more instances of flooding during the spring. This could potentially be exacerbated by snowmelt, because climate change also tells us that we're going to get increases in temperature. And that will actually cause rapid snow melting, which will exacerbate all this flooding.
So what is the city's interest in this?
Well, the city is always planning ways to improve its drainage system to make sure that we can actually get rid of all this water in a safe way to reduce damage, make sure that there aren't costs to the public, so forth. So they're looking at ways to get rid of all this excess. So it's not just new methods of improving the minor and major drainage system, but looking at new methods such as green roof systems, porous pavements, permeable pavements, all of these other methods that can actually get rid of this excess that may be brought on by climate change.
In your talk this morning, you gave a few examples. One, you mentioned the green roof, but you also talked about irrigation from sewage ponds. How would that work?
Oh, well, what climate change also seems to be telling us is that outside of the spring flooding months, particularly the months of July and August here in the Calgary region, we actually may be getting drier. And so what we can do is actually use stormwater as a resource and reduce the strain on our potable water supplies by actually using the stormwater as irrigation water for our parklands and possibly expand it from there. So we're actually looking into developing guidelines for using this stormwater for irrigating parkland, understanding the environmental, the technical, the health, and sociological feasibility of actually using these stormwater ponds for irrigating and to reduce the strain on potable water supplies, which we know will actually increase, not just due to climate change, but also due to the expected increases in population that Calgary is going to be seeing in the next several decades.
What does the public say to you in terms of using or reusing this water? It's almost like a gray water that you'd be using.
That's a really good question. We were actually very interested in what the public had to say about this, because they're very concerned about, the health risks that may arise due to being exposed to water that isn't potable. So we actually, we were looking at a case study in the southeast of Calgary where we surveyed the residents who were living around this pond that was a potential candidate for irrigating with stormwater, irrigating the parkland that the people were actually using around this pond. And so we asked them a number of questions about whether or not they would support such an idea of irrigating with stormwater, whether they even knew where the water in this pond came from, what their knowledge was of the potential health risks associated with it, if there were any. Do they understand what kind of water quality issues arise from stormwater? So we conducted a survey, and we found that the public, by and large, are very supportive of such an endeavor. They actually want to work with the municipality and the City of Calgary to actually come up with adaptation strategies, because they are continually seeing warnings from the city of Calgary asking them not to irrigate and to, because we're going through a bit of a mini drought or so forth. So they actually want to work with the city. So they were really actually supportive of the idea. What they were interested in though receiving, though, was constant communication. They felt that they weren't informed enough about what kind of efforts were going on. They were glad that this was happening, but they hadn't heard about anything of this kind until they got this survey.
Now, you've been doing this work on a very urban setting, but you also do work on hydrology in the forest. What kinds of things are you doing in the forest?
Oh, that's, yeah, this is a very interesting research area that we're doing. It's I work with colleagues in the Department of Biology at the University of Calgary. Dr. Ed Johnson's one of them, and he's actually a forest ecologist. He's interested in forest fires and their impact on forest regeneration, particularly in the boreal forest. So he and I teamed up because he kind of needed a hydrologist to sort of work out an issue that dealt with forest regeneration. Because as it turns out, at least for the boreal forest, forest regeneration is a direct function of the hydrology of the area.
With your experience both in an urban setting and in a forest setting, are you drawing any conclusions in terms of similarities, or do you see differences between the two areas in terms of what you can draw as lessons in terms of hydrology and what we should be looking for in the future?
Well, that's an interesting question. Hydrology... Hydrology is, we call it the integrator, in that it integrates all kinds of information from different fields. It's a function of scale, but as an integrator, it's actually integrating information from ecology and from engineering, all kinds of different disciplines. So when you talk about forest hydrology versus urban hydrology, there's a lot that's very much the same. It's all similar in terms of, fundamental physics and things like that. But then the differences are in characteristics and parameters, possibly scale effects and so forth. But it's incredibly fascinating. But it's a difficult question to answer, actually.
Thank you very much, Katerina.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
That was Dr. Katerina Vallejo. She's an associate professor in civil engineering at the Schulich School of Engineering at the University of Calgary. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by Alberta Ingenuity, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Genome Alberta, the Alberta Conservation Association, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Research Council, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.